And hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast. We are on episode number 119. I am Michael Citro from themainland.com, the founder and managing editor. And joining me is David Rowe. Dave, how are you this week?
I'm good. I've realized that I shouldn't go out and play soccer on leaves because you slip and fall and hurt yourself. But other than that, I'm good because I did win the game, so, you know.
Well, that's good. Leaves, yeah, slippery suckers. I remember in when I was in college, I hit a curb really hard with my car because I turned on a wet brick road with leaves on it.
Yep.
So wet leaves on a brick road is like, it makes ice seem not slippery at all. And I went in pretty hard. So I know
what
you're talking about.
It's like me trying to cut and go the other direction with the ball on leaves. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that. At your age, especially.
Yeah. Especially at my age.
Well, Dave, I'm excited about this episode of the Mainland Podcast here, number 119, because this is the first time this season we've got to talk about a victory, Orlando City or the Pride, and now we have a win in the win column as the Lions hosted the New York Red Bulls. Lots of familiar faces in the Red Bull lineup with Aurelien Collin and Tommy Redding as the starting center back duo. And Carlos Rivas he was announced as a striker, but I swear he was playing under Etienne the entire game.
Yeah.
So, again, Carlos Rivas allergic to the penalty area still is a thing. And I'm a little disappointed that he didn't clear the Heineken sign, but he did put one in the other end that was probably going to clear the Heineken sign if there was one in the wall. So I'm going to count that as a half point for me on that prediction.
Well, that makes sense, though, because he did the Heineken sign when he was the home team. Now he's the away team, so it's the other goal.
Oh, so he's going the other way.
Right.
Okay. I gotcha. I understand. Yeah. It all makes sense suddenly. And, of course, he was offside two or three times as well. So it was the old Carlos we know and love, sometimes
not
didn't
the,
love quite
so
much.
Not the Carlos that's actually been scoring goals, not against us.
Yeah, well, you know, Carlos Rivas is one. I mean, we've talked about Carlos many times.
Yes,
about
many
how
times.
Frustrating a player he is when he is capable of such unbelievable skill and he's got the speed and he just hasn't been able to put it all together consistently. He's had individually fantastic games. I mean, the game at Montreal comes to mind that he had up there where he was involved in every goal. The game at New York Red Bulls back in 2015 when he was setting up mm-hmm. goals left and right and just making, you know, pinpoint crosses from the left wing. He's had these opportunities. He's had these games. He just hasn't been able to put them together in a, you know, any kind of consistent way. Now, Orlando City welcomed the Red Bulls, and of course, Red Bulls are in CONCACAF Champions League. They've been rotating their squad, but that squad's actually been quite good, even when the starters have not played.
Yes,
you know,
they have.
They really scorched a Portland Timbers team that admittedly is struggling, but, I mean, they just tore them apart, and I believe that was the game that Rivas had his two goals. But they came in, and they really play the same way as the starters. They get in your face. They make you uncomfortable. They turn you over, and they strike. And you know, there's this thing on MLSsoccer.com, the match center. They take the highlights, and they show the best passes, best skills, and all that kind of thing. And if you look at the best passes video on MLS, the Red Bulls have like four of them. I don't know how many there are, but there's probably like 20. And they have like four of them because they were just perfect passes. And, you know, they led to goals. And they were able to score three times. They scored 7 minutes in off of a play where El Munir stepped in and tried to knock the ball away, but it went straight to Rakowski or Chukowski. I'm not sure how you say his name, but Owski. Let's just call him Owski. Anyway, he sends the ball to Kaku out on the left wing and just an inch perfect cross to clear El Munir by about an inch and falls straight onto Velo's head, and he put it in with the header, made it 1-0 early, and the entire stadium you could just sense Like, here we go again.
Yeah, it was a here we go again.
It really
was. You
know,
especially because it was, you know, Elmenir getting beaten on the back post, which we've seen a couple times this year. Now, like you said, it was an incredible pass. I don't know, you know, could he have defended it? Maybe, but it's not like he was, you know, sitting up at the top of the box just looking around going, what? You know, I mean, it wasn't that bad.
No, I mean, when that ball comes in, he's got to be looking at it thinking, I've got this. It's going to fall right for me, and I'm going to head it away. And then it just
exactly
buzzes right over you. I mean, there's two things you could do. I don't know that he had time to get out wide enough to get on the player, but, you know, it's just like a basketball pass. If you try to undercut it, sometimes that thing's going to be lobbed perfectly over you and get into the big man. So, you know, that's what happened. And you know what? Elmenir has given up a couple of goals on back posts or given up some chances on the back post. But here, the dirty little secret in soccer is every fullback does. Every fullback does.
It's only – no, Michael, don't you understand? It's only your guy that it matters.
I remember, I think it was – there was a game Patrice Evra got beat like – three times in a row on the back post for Manchester United. I'm like, if you were just a little taller, Patrice, if you're just like 3 inches taller, it was similar to that. But I would say that was it was a bad goal. It was, you know, Sutter didn't get out and close it down enough in time to prevent a perfect cross. But, you know, that play was a bang bang play where it's now it's, oh, it's here we go. We're going to take it away. Oh, no, here they come. And everybody's sort of kind of scrambling to get back into position quickly. And it's, you know, it doesn't take much for this level of athlete to make you pay for those kind of mistakes and those kind of turnovers. So it was nice to see Orlando City bounce back. They it took them a little bit, but they finally equalized on a Will Johnson goal that started with just a beautiful pass from Sasha Kljestan to send Miram down to the line. And they got just the movement over there between those guys got the entire Red Bulls line out of position. Our old friend Tommy Redding was well out of position. When Miram got on the ball, he only had to slot it past Aurelien Collin. And Will Johnson just had to tap it in. So a beautiful team goal there to make it 1-1. And things looked like, hey, this is pretty good. This is going to be a game. And boy, what a game it ended up being, because the Red Bulls came back. They took the lead again, and this time it was a Cam Lindley turnover in the midfield in the defensive half. And you know,
and once again, yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, it fell to I think was below on the assist on the second one, but he made a tremendous pass to Etienne, and Sané had stepped to try to maybe spring an offside, and it didn't work. And he tried to recover, but Etienne's got really good speed, and Sané probably was only about a couple of inches away from being able to get that pass before it got through, but just couldn't quite get there. Etienne beats Bendik between the legs of all things, and that's an unfortunate goal. Should not be giving up that goal. Joe will want that one back, and it's 2-1. But 2 minutes later, we get a goal from Dom Dwyer, because he scores when he wants, Dave, as you know, and he basically manhandled Luis Robles on a corner kick, and just powered his way, bulled his way through the goalkeeper, and you know, a lot of Red Bulls fans crying foul, saying, hey, they interfered with our goalkeeper, and I don't blame them. I think if it happened to Bendik, I'd be pretty bitter about it.
He would be bitter, yeah, but they. But, they looked at it.
The whistle did not blow, and the goal counted, and it was 2-2. And that's the way the first half ended. And I thought, you know, with a poor start that Orlando City had, I thought that was a pretty good half, you know, halftime score, you know, with all things considered. I thought that Orlando City got more in the game as the half went on. But you know, the danger always with Red Bulls is that if you just turn the ball over, you know, it's a scary situation.
Yeah, so they tend to score in bunches. Although I will say that when Dom got that his first goal, and when you know the team got their second goal, in our internal chat, I said, "Well, we were right," or I said I was right. Both Michael and I were wrong about what the score was going to be, because we both predicted 2-1 Red Bulls.
Yeah,
and by halftime, We were already out of the running.
Yeah, well, that, and I said that to some folks in the press box. When it became 2-1, when Etienne scored, I said, well, the one thing we know is it's not going to end like this. There's going to be more goals in this game. Well, how do you figure that?
Yep.
Well, because I predicted 2-1, and that's what it is right now.
Yeah.
So it was 2-2 at the half. And
now, wait a minute. Timeout. I gave you credit. You don't give me credit in the press box?
That hurts. No, because people would...
Ah, that hurts.
Well, people would go, who?
Ah, that hurts even worse.
Yeah, well, I'm not thinking that, I don't think Orlando Sentinel writers are listening to this podcast, although they should be. They have their own stuff going on over there. But, you know, out of the halftime break, you know, Orlando City comes out and off a really heads-up play off a throw-in, Dom Dwyer smashes in a goal and makes it 3-2. Dave,
well, he scores when he wants.
He does score when he wants, and he gives Orlando City its first lead of the season when he wants.
Yes, that was very exciting.
It's like, oh my goodness, Orlando City has a higher number on the board than the other team. This is new. So that was nice to see, and
it was a beautiful goal.
It really was, and then Orlando City really looked like they had a lot of opportunities to put the game away. You had, Mueller had one just absolutely robbed off the line by Robles. It was a tremendous cross. He gets a head on it, and it's definitely going in, and Robles gets like a fingertip on it and keeps it out, and that was tough. There was a goal scored by Merrim, his first as a Lion, but it didn't count because the offside flag was up, and I will admit that I haven't gone back and seen a good replay of that, so I don't have – it looked like it was probably offside live, but I didn't go back and take a good, better look at that, which is unusual. I usually go back and look at those plays over and over, but in this case, I did not get an opportunity to. And then, of course, Mueller was taken down in the box at one point, and I have looked at that one, and that is a foul, and that probably should have been a penalty.
Without a doubt. It absolutely should have been a penalty, but, you know.
So some
that's going to happen at least once a game. That's going
to
happen.
Yeah. So there's some opportunities there for Orlando City to put the game away. They did not. And then in the 82nd minute, they paid for not putting it away because Will Johnson gets what I think was kind of probably a fatigue foul late. He goes in, gets a little bit too up into the offensive player with his back to goal and fouls him just outside the box. They get a free kick and. Sané gets absolutely molested in the box by Aaron Long, who stays upright and heads it in off Bendik. Another one I thought Joe probably should have been a little bit sharper on, but it was 3-3 with 8 minutes to go, and you're thinking, here we go again. But no, this Orlando City team does not stop. They do not quit.
No.
And no, they do not. And... you know, we all thought Scott Sutter had given Orlando City the lead back, but it wasn't Scott Sutter.
No, it was not.
It was officially Scott Sutter until a couple minutes after the game. the ball, he sent a screamer on goal, and it deflected off the sort of the back of the neck of Josue Coleman, who, sort of scored his first MLS goal that – he didn't know anything about it, but he scored it, and it was 4-3.
He opened his account by the skin of his neck.
That's right. The most unfortunate thing about the goal change was that they gave Sutter an assist, but they didn't give Kleshchen the hockey assist. Originally, it was Sutter from Kleshchen. And if Kleshchen doesn't see Sutter on the far side all alone and get him that ball, that doesn't happen. Yeah, Kleshchen absolutely instrumental in that. Goal and then he had the hockey assist early in the game, so could have been a two assist game for Sasha. He didn't have the best passing game; he's only in the 73% area, but the one he really did connect the team quite well up at the top. The passes that he did make were phenomenal. It still seems there's a little bit of uncertainty between him and Merum and between him and Coleman as to where they're going to go. And I would even throw Yoshi in there a little bit. So I think that that chemistry will get better and better. But, you know, you look at the two goals that he helped make. You look at the I believe he had the cross for Mueller's header as well. And a number of other really good plays and opportunities that were created because he sent the ball the correct way at just the perfect with the perfect weight on it. So you're starting to see what Sasha Kljestan can do in his first home start. I thought Bendik had a tough night. I thought that Dom obviously was the, to me, the heart of the team on Saturday. And he really carried the team and kind of kept the crowd going. And his battle with Colin was just phenomenal. Yeah. It was an epic battle between those two. And honestly, two real opportunities for New York to get players sent off in that game. Colin probably should have picked up his second yellow about 5 minutes after he picked up his first one. He went right over the back of Dom with his shoe. Clear Dom's shoulder.
Well, as Orlando City fans remember, Colin is always good for a sending off.
Yeah, he's always right on that edge, and he's the same old Aurelian. I mean, the play he got his yellow card, he rolled around like he'd been shot, and in hopes that if I act like I'm hurt, it won't card me. But it didn't work. He got booked. Should have got booked again. I thought that Jairo Marufo was extremely lenient there. And also Kaku basically kicked the legs out from under Cam Lindley at the end of the first half, and nobody saw it. And that could have easily been a sending off offense as well. So
You had it got replayed so many times, and people are like, I don't see the foul. You've got to look at the top of the screen away from the ball to see what the heck happened on that one.
Yeah, it was really, like, there was a little bit of pushing and shoving, maybe some jawing, and
then all of a sudden, boom.
As Lindley's kind of walking away, just a really cowardly, cheap shot by Kaku, and there's no place for that, and he definitely would have been sent off if that was right in front of the referee. If somebody had a good look at that, I think that's a straight red. I don't think anybody even complains about it, so... You know, we'll take it. You know, you could say, well, that Aaron Long may have fouled Sané, and on the other end, Dwyer may have fouled Robles, so that kind of cancels out. I thought it was a deserving win. I thought that Orlando City was the better team on the day, overall. I think they had a little bit more possession. I think they outpassed them. They definitely outshot them. 8 shots on goal, which is a large percentage for Orlando City. Usually, I think it was just a couple weeks ago we talked about 19 shots and only like 4 on goal Vancouver. 4 might be wrong, but it's probably in that ballpark. And then this time it was 14 shots and 8 on goal. Very high percentage getting them on frame, and that was it was good to see them be a little bit sharper in the final third. And I think you have to give a lot of that credit to Dom Dwyer being there.
Absolutely. Not only that, but we're finally getting a lot of the pieces back. So you had Sasha on, you had Miriam on, you had Dom on, you had Coleman on. All of a sudden, all these attacking pieces that we went out and got, now they're all in the field together. So you do start to see it come together. And it came together big for this match. 4 goals is fantastic, and was every bit needed to win the match. But it was... It was good to see, especially given the lack of goal scoring that had happened up to this point. So hopefully the floodgates opening for what we can expect going forward. And you're absolutely right. Dom was the tip of that spear as he. Kept his teammates involved, kept the crowd involved, was his usual exuberant self, and grabbing a brace to boot.
His first home brace as a Lion since rejoining the team. I've tipped my hand. I've been talking about Dom. He's certainly my man of the match. Is that the way you saw it as well?
Yeah, without a doubt. I was originally thinking there was actually a lot of good play. Johnson played a heck of a game. Other than that foul near the end, like you said, which was probably just from being tired, I thought he had a really good game, but you know, Dom Dwyer scores when he wants, and he got a brace, and his the one goal was up for goal of the week. Now, unfortunately, it ran up against Zlatan's, you know, shot from.
Did Zlatan do something this weekend?
Yeah. He scored a brace too, and one of those was a, you know, he chipped the goalie pretty ridiculously. So, but because if it hadn't been for that, I think Dom might have won, you know, goal of the week. So, because it was, you know, he took that, the throw in comes in and just, you know, one touches that thing into the goal. It was quite an exciting and phenomenal goal. So because of all that, yeah, without a doubt, Dom was my man of the match.
Yeah, he really smashed that. And against one of, you know, not the greatest angle, but against one of the top goalkeepers in all of MLS. And he beat him pretty handily on that shot. So just a great play all around. Good heads-up play for him and El Munir to find each other. You know, it's rare that you see a throw-in lead to a goal for Orlando City, but pretty great. You mentioned Will Johnson. I think it's worth reiterating. Will had a monster game for Orlando City. Not only did he score the goal, but his passing rating was over 90%. He had hit 5 of his 7 long balls. He had 3 of Orlando City's shots, 2 of the 3 on target. He won 4 free kicks. He had 8 recoveries, 4 tackles, 2 interceptions, 5 clearances. I mean, he filled the stat sheet.
I don't know if anybody worked harder than Will Johnson, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's it. His work rate was fantastic the whole game, and he had to play a couple of different roles. They started the 4-4-2 diamond in the second half. They played a 4-2-3-1, and he was playing a defensive midfield role in the second half, more of a sort of a wing role in the first half, you know, the diamond wing, if you will, with Lindley underneath as the 6 and Yoshi and also Sasha Kljestan. So, you know, a little bit of a different role in the second half, but I thought he did very well. And I think that it really bodes well for this team. If this team is going to be a 4-2-3-1 team when everybody's healthy, which a lot of people think that's the case, you know, it makes you feel good knowing that Will Johnson's capable of putting that kind of performance in, because, you know, you're going to have Yoshi going to World Cup. You're going to have some games when you need to rest Russell or rest Yotun, and it's good to see that he can come in and play that spot and do it well. So just a tremendous game from him. And you know, he was kind of up and down the first few games, but he certainly had a great game against New York, and it was very important. It was needed. So kudos to him. So our man of the match, obviously, Dom Dwyer, and the Lions will now move on to play the Portland Timbers this Sunday, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. Dave, the Orlando Pride were not as fortunate this weekend.
No, they were not.
They went up to Washington to play the Spirit. They had no Australians, no Brazilians, so you're already missing 5 starters there. You're missing a 6th starter with Camilla being still injured. You're missing a 7th starter, as Alex Morgan didn't make the trip with the concussion protocol. A little bit sick of the concussion protocol, to be honest with you, so far this season.
Yeah, it's gotten a little bit too much of it in Orlando this year.
Yeah. So the Pride go up to Washington very shorthanded. They played, I'm not going to tell you that they played a great game, because they didn't. A lot of turnovers, a lot of problems clearing the ball, but they did play a good road game in that they held Washington scoreless until late in the game, and both teams were a little bit gassed, but it always seemed like some team is going to make a mistake and capitalize, and that's going to be it. And it was unfortunately the Pride that made that mistake. The chance in the first half, Rachel Hill smashed one off the crossbar. Aubrey Bledsoe made, the former Pride goalkeeper, made a couple of nice saves as well in that game. But just a turnover in above the opponent's box just kind of deflected out and really ignited the Washington break. And Mallory Pugh was able to replicate Derek Etienne's goal by going through the wickets on Ashlyn Harris, who opened up a little bit too much and showed too much of that 5-hole. And got nutmegged for a goal, and then it was already in the final 10 minutes of the game, and so now it's 1-0. You could tell the Pride were shattered. The players were just absolutely gassed from about the 70th minute on. And you know, Tom Sermonti told me before the season started, I don't know, no team really is in any different boat, but he definitely thought his team didn't look like it was going to be 90-minute match fit to start the season. And they don't have the same kind of preseason as MLS teams do. And then, of course, they didn't have a lot of their players for most of the preseason. So very difficult situation to gain match fitness while the season's ongoing. But you could see some signs of some things there, even without all the star players that were missing. And it was Washington getting the goal and then, you know, pushing forward to try to get an equalizer just kind of led to the second. And the second really didn't matter a whole lot. So the Pride falling at Washington, a place where the Pride have never won. And they come home and they are, or they don't come home. They go to an international break and then they go to Portland to play the Thorns. But they are 0-1-1 on the season. And that's kind of where they've been the last couple of years after a couple of games.
Yeah, which should, you know, we gave, or at least we, you and I gave the men's team the benefit of the doubt with guys out on injury and whatnot, and said, okay, everybody just wait once we get everybody back. All right. So, you know, first match, probably go out, 1-1 draw. And, you know, now there's a whole bunch of players that aren't there, and they go on the road, which is notoriously tough to win on the road, especially against a team like Spirit. And, you know, okay, they get a loss. That's almost to be expected. You don't want it to be that way, but it's certainly, you know, not out of the realm of possibility. And so, especially with that many players missing, you know, she even said, you know, hey, look, you know, we're not making excuses. You know, we're the players that have to be out there. We still have to, you know, do that. But that being said, you know, if you've only got so many experienced players that can actually get on the field and make a difference, especially late in a game like that, when you've got somebody like, you know, Mallory Pugh, who is one of, you know, a national team player and is an excellent player, they're going to make you pay if you make a mistake. It happens. It's a long season. That's going to happen here and there. You know, we get a loss on the road. Okay. We got the international break. Okay. Got to travel to Portland. Okay. You know, that all stinks. But this team, what we saw this last weekend is not indicative of who this team is going to be all year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody, or for those of you who watch the Pride, and if you're not watching the Pride, go watch the Pride. But for those of you who do, you know, take the opportunity, watch the players that don't usually make the field, let them get their minutes in, just like we talked about, or, you know, with the Orlando City players, you know, the younger guys getting some minutes in while people were hurt. Same opportunity here. It helps down the road. And that's the positive takeaway I'm going to do. And then, you know, we just move forward from here.
Yeah, it's things will get a little better toward the end of April when the Brazilians and Australians return. But they got to weather the storm, and I know the Pride think they have a deep enough team. They should be able to get results without some of those players. Certainly didn't expect to be missing Alex Morgan in week two, but you know that's the way the cookie crumbles,
and that makes a big difference.
Got to be a little sharper in the final third. Sydney LaRue hasn't really found her stride quite yet that she had in the preseason, but it's a lot different playing against NWSL defenders and goalkeepers than against college defenders and goalkeepers. So it'll come for her, and it'll come for Rachel Hill, and hopefully it will come sooner rather than later, because the Thorns are not an easy team to beat, and it's going to be on the road. You got to think Portland's going to be in the running for the cup again this year, and you know, it's unfortunate that you got to play them not at full strength. They're going to be missing a couple of players too, but not the same amount as Orlando. And we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks. The Pride will have some players going off to international competitions. Morgan and Harris are on the team that will be playing two friendlies against Mexico for the U.S. Shalina Zdorsky is off to help out Team Canada against France in a friendly. And that's on April 9th, I believe. And then Nadia Gomes and Lotta Okvist also off to play for their international teams as well. So It's weekend off for Pride fans. Everybody take a deep breath, regroup. Hopefully they'll come back, if they could just get a draw at Portland, that's probably a good result considering how many players are missing. And then, things will hopefully start getting a little bit back to normal. And I really think this team is built to, once they get everybody on the field, to really build momentum and become just a steamrolling machine toward the end of the year, like they were last year, but I think even more so this year.
Well, sooner anyway. And we spoke about this. I mean, we mentioned that, you know, when you have a team that is as good as this, that means that you have players who are going to be international players, which means you're going to be missing them for part of the year, especially in, you know, a year like this. So this was expected. And it was expected by Tom Cermani and the rest of the team. You know, how they adjust, that'll determine how they do when the players aren't there.
Absolutely. All right, before we get to this week's guest, let's circle back to Orlando City for a minute and talk about the before we go for even do that, we're going to tell you that the Pride did sign a few players since we last talked, some players in the for international player replacements. Nadia Gomes, we mentioned, she is the draft pick for Orlando this past NWSL college draft, so she is officially a player for the team. She did not get in the game. Bridget Callahan, the first international replacement player, did get a few minutes at the end of the game, so it's nice that she got her debut. But also a couple other players that the Pride have signed. They signed Abby Alinsky, who is a very talented midfielder, was drafted by the Houston Dash. She was let go, and Orlando invited her to camp as a non-roster invitee. And also, help me out with the name. Creighton is
Christine Creighton.
Christine,
yes.
Creighton, and she is another player that Cermani has had in here, training with the group, and so those three are replacements. Didn't look like he wanted to get them on the field this past weekend. Probably break in case of emergency options. I did think we would see Nadia, once the Spirit scored, I thought we'd see Nadia in the game because you needed some offense, and there really wasn't anybody left on the bench that could provide any at that point because Chi had played the whole game, Rachel Hill had played the whole game, Sid had played the whole game. Not a lot of real scoring options. Did bring in Danica Evans for a rare appearance, and it was for a minute there, it was like, oh, wow, last year in the second game, Danica Evans tied Washington with a late goal. This is her thing. She's got this. But no, she didn't really get too many good looks.
Well, you can't blame them for trying. I mean, it worked before, so exactly. Why not try it again?
Yeah, I just think I would have brought in Nadia as well, especially because I didn't think she was having a very good game, so I thought that maybe take her out. But anyway, she did come out before for Danica instead. All right, so yeah, as I started to say, Orlando City, will circle back to them. Some great news this week, at least early in the week. Of course, anything can change between now and the end of the week. But we know, Dave, that today Jonathan Spector was training. We know Yuri Rossell was training. And we know that Stefano Pino was training.
Wow, that sounds suspiciously like everybody was back training again.
I'm very suspicious of that myself. So.
That sounds too good to be true because we don't get to have nice things.
That's true. But it would be nice to have some nice things ready to go for the Portland Timbers this weekend because Portland has struggled out of the gate a little bit. I think they got a couple of draws in their last couple of outings, but they were getting mashed pretty good earlier in the season. And they look like they're starting to find their footing, but it's a long trip for them. Hopefully it'll be nice and hot and humid.
They do have to travel across the country.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens this week. But, it would be nice to have Spector back. Obviously, Sané and Tarek are capable players, and they got their first start together this past weekend. And they look like they could be, just a formidable center back duo. But, Spector is the team captain for a reason. He's a leader. He knows what he's doing. I think it would probably be a good problem for Jason Christ to have all of his center backs healthy. Chris Schuler has not been healthy, and he wasn't healthy enough to even dress. So the emergency center back when Tarek left the game on Saturday was R.J. Allen. And tell me that wasn't frightening when you saw R.J. Allen at center back with Bradley Wright Phillips checking into the game.
Yeah.
With fresh legs.
So. That reminds me of there was a football movie where it was like, hey, coach, I haven't played either. I don't think I should be on the field.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, it would be nice to have Specs back. It would certainly be phenomenal to get Rosell some minutes and start to get him match fit. And, of course, to have some backup at the striker position with Pino, if he could work his way back into the lineup, that'd be fantastic. Because I think he really took a lot from that first game, scoring the goal. And then the second game, he looked like he was starting to work his way into some danger. And then he got hurt. So it would be nice to have Stefano Pino back on, because he was Orlando's co-leading goal scorer until Dom Dwyer scored two on Saturday.
Yeah, well, you know, going forward, let's let Dom go score when he wants, and then when he's done, let's bring on Pino.
Absolutely. Now, the cool thing about Dom Dwyer is he has played 13 games for Orlando City since the trade. He has scored 6 goals and assisted on 4 others. That's a good return on investment.
Yes, for those who were a little upset because of Dom's injury, blah, 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 look at the numbers. It's paying off.
Yeah, he's been involved in a goal in 10 goal. Been involved in 10 goals in 13 games. That's pretty nice. That's DP level there, right there.
I don't know anybody on any team that won't take that.
Yeah, well, maybe not Zlatan, because he's played 19 minutes and has 2 goals. So,
okay, fine.
Anyway,
he's only played 1 game.
Yes, this is true. All right, Dave, let us get to this week's guest. Pretty excited. We're going to talk a little bit about Orlando City in a little bit different way than we normally do. We're going to look at it from a coaching perspective. We're going to get to our special guest right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, happy to have with us Orlando City assistant coach Miles Joseph. Miles, thanks so much for being with us on the Mainland Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start out. I'm really very interested in the assistant coach, head coach dynamic, and I just wanted to kind of start out by asking, you know, how you guys, you know, sort of divide your responsibilities. What do you and CJ do that overlaps? What do you guys do that's sort of your own domain and that kind of thing?
Well, so as long as I've been with Jason, we've always had our staff divided up, usually with a person overseeing the defenders, goalkeepers, and the midfielders and the forwards. And so we had a unique situation here, and we came in where Bobby had stayed from the previous staff, which gave us an option to have more eyes around the field, which was great for us. Mm-hmm. My job in particular on the staff is to oversee the midfield group and the attacking group. So that's kind of how they split it up.
Gotcha. So with midfield group, attacking group, obviously there was plenty of changes in the offseason for you guys with that. What how much were you involved in all that in the player acquisition, and what are you most proud of from the off season?
The entire staff is very involved with player acquisitions. We all do obviously a lot of video work and flying and watch games. We'll fly all over the world watching games. Live as well. So, obviously the coaches don't negotiate the contracts, but we had a very good off season and we all agreed that, we brought in some really young, talented, and also some veteran attackers, into this group that are, going to just, help us move forward in the next couple years. And also give us a little bit of a jump start into what we need as far as energy in the midfield and in the group, the way we want to defend too.
Miles, what's the biggest challenge for you as a coach with so many new faces coming in this season?
Well, I think with when you make so many changes in a group, it takes a little bit of time, which is tough for us because, you know, there's not a whole lot of time besides preseason to get things, you know, ironed out. And you know, you actually have to have, you know, when you enter preseason, everybody there, you know, for the entire preseason to really start to integrate what you want, you know, the team to look like. So when guys are, you know, injured in the off season, they come in and trickle in. I think you're starting to see it now, that guys are, becoming healthy. Some of them, you know, had some little nagging things through the off season that are now becoming healthy again, especially in the midfield and in the attacking group. And that helps now because you can see the group starting to really mesh. And but it's also brought out some guys that step forward, that maybe been, you know, were 11, 12, 13, 14 on the roster to get some significant minutes. And then some young players like you're seeing with Cam Lindley and, you know, Mueller, to get them some significant minutes early in the season is gonna help us in the long run with their maturity and to be able to count on them when, you know, when we need them.
Well, speaking of those lagging or nagging injuries and guys taking a little while to get on the field, how frustrating is that to you as a coach? Especially, you know, those first couple matches when we weren't getting a lot of results.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we have to look at it in a different way because they're not going to get any healthier any quicker, you know, than they are. So we actually have to deal with what we have and who we have. And, you know, the results, you know, didn't go our way, but what we were doing during those games, we were getting a lot of chances and you know, there was some good soccer. So we know that, you know, when everybody is, you know, when everybody gets healthy and we have, you know, the group that we, you know, that we thought the idea that we had in our, you know, picture that we had in our head in the off season to get that group on the field, when they get together, it's going to be pretty. It's going to look really nice. The product's going to look really nice. And you can see that starting to happen, you know, in big segments now.
You know, one of the guys, obviously, that you've mentioned, you know, not by name, but as being out, Yuri Rosell, you've had a little bit of opportunity to see him in training. What are you seeing from him and, you know, sort of how far off do you think he is from actually getting some game time?
Well, Yuri was one of the most important pieces we feel in the off season, that number six position, to have somebody with his qualities and characteristics to be in that position on our team is going to be huge. He's in training, he's doing well, he's recovering well. And you know, from what we've seen, you know, he's going to contribute a lot to this team, and just having him on the field eventually is going to be a huge boost for our team.
Speaking of having Yuri back, it's well known that Jason prefers the 4-4-2 diamond. Obviously we saw a little bit of that at the beginning of the last game, and then it looked like you guys switched formations. One would assume with Yuri coming back that's what you're working towards. Is that indeed the case? And if so, we have a lot of readers who are a little bit skeptical of the diamond formation. what are your feelings on that?
Yeah. I mean, we always balance it out. We've been training since day one. You know, not only in a diamond, you know, we have other plans, and, you know, so we have to look at our opponents and players and who's healthy and who, you know, what's available to us. And, you know, we've been very successful playing in the diamond. And this group has done a really good job without our full team playing in the diamond, the players that we built this team around. So I wouldn't say that we've actually played it at our best. But I would say it's at some points it's looked really, really good. So now, with other players becoming available, we'll have to see. You know, we still love the diamond, but we're always open to other things as well. So we'll just have to, you know, see when everybody is healthy and what's going to be best for the team. So we're not closed-minded at all. We love the diamond.
Miles, you know, you mentioned some of the guys getting important minutes early in their career. Cam Lindley, yep. And Chris Mueller, the two rookies coming in this year. Can you maybe just give your thoughts so far on Lindley's conversion to defensive mid, and then maybe just talk a little bit about you know, keeping Chris Mueller positive, because he's had some good moments, but you know Robles robs him of a goal this past weekend, and just how do you keep your head up and continue to do the little things?
Yeah, I mean that has a lot to do, you know, I think with us, you know, the staff and you know how we manage the young players. I think, you know, obviously Cam's a tremendous, tremendous talent, you know, and, you know, listen, players are going to, you know, young players, especially as they get used to being pros, whether it's physically, mentally, you know, tactically, technically, you know, they're going to take time to really turn into pros. So we don't actually judge them on all their mistakes, although, you know, in a stadium full of people, they might judge them on mistakes. Mm-hmm. But we see a lot of positives for them. And also, you know, Mueller's missed a few chances, but that's a striker. He could score his next three or four chances too. So, you know, we just have to keep these guys going and practice good habits. And they're two fantastic young kids that want to learn and are willing to learn and want to stay after in training and do all the extra things to become, you know, top level pros. So it's exciting to have them on the team.
Miles, you mentioned that you have been with Jason for quite a while now. He's a bit of a quiet guy publicly. Could you give us your a little insight into, you know, how he thinks and how he coaches and you know, give us a little inside scoop so that we don't see – the only thing that we see is that stoic face of his when he's answering questions.
Yeah. If you knew him or know him like I do, you would – he is one of the greatest people you'll ever meet, family person, you know, he will do – anything for you as a friend, as a coach. Obviously he's my boss, but I've known him for, you know, obviously the years, and, you know, the balance being, you know, close friends with him and being a boss, he managed that situation, you know, which is a tough one to manage. He's just a great person. He's a lot of fun, which you probably don't see that on the field, because obviously he's the face of the franchise and
he's got his game face on. Yeah.
he's got to, you know, everything, you know, I mean, he takes his job very serious, which we all do. And he has us, you know, he has his way that he wants to work. And it's very important, that the way that we work with him, and he's not going to take any cutting corners or anything. He wants what's best for this club, and he's not going to cut any corners doing it. Might, you know, he's got, if you could see his work ethic, if any fan or any person could see that his work ethic and what he does in the off season and what he does during the season, they wouldn't have any questions of the direction that this club's going to be going.
Miles, I want to turn our attention toward game week and preparation for a game. What is game week like for you from sort of from start to finish, and how does the staff sort of come together to create a game plan, decide what shape and personnel will be used, and that kind of thing? Obviously, Jason has final say, but just take me through that process.
Okay. Well, we obviously you're scouting. We rotate the games basically from each coach for the scouting part. So we will watch the we'll do our scouting, however many games it is. Then we'll sit down and put that together the week before our next opponent. Watch their the last game over the weekend, and come in, get with our scouting coordinator. And our video analyst and do a thorough kind of, we'll take all the clips out and put that together and be ready to, present what we're going to be working on in the week. And then also go over the last game and things that we need to improve on. And we'll set up training for the week on our next opponent and basically what we need to be doing. And so, Tuesday, Wednesdays will be a little more difficult as far as workloads. And then you bring it down before the game on Saturday. And all the coaches are involved in the certain aspects as far as, scouting the games, training sessions and, individualizing basically like one day a week. We'll, defenders will go work in a small group with CJ, and then we'll get the attacking players and obviously the goalkeepers train with Tim, and then we'll bring it all together. And so we have a good little rotation during the week of how we work, and so we try to maximize that week of work and make sure they have all the energy they need for Saturday or Sunday or Friday game.
But do you ever just like, do you guys like just all sit in one room and say, we need to play this player this week against this particular guy? Or does Jason just make that decision based on what he sees?
We do that all week, every day, from the time we get in at 6:37 by the time we leave at 6 at night. So that's an ongoing conversation all the time.
Well, speaking of the players, obviously, you told us that you work for the midfield and the attack. So you guys do all the scouting, and then you get out, and obviously you're getting the players involved in that and showing them what you're expecting, and not only from the from them, but also from the opposition. What are some of the differences you get from different guys that are out there? Do you get pushback from some? Do you what kind of interaction is going on when that you have that preparation?
For pushback from guys on our team?
Yeah.
Or no, we don't. I mean, we talk about it. We ask questions, but really we're laying out the game plan and. There's no pushback because everybody sees it, and our players are pretty savvy and smart, and they watch the game. So if there's something to be said or something that they disagree with, they'll not even disagree with, but they if they see something different, they'll say it in a meeting and say, what do we think about this, and then we'll give them our opinion. And but we're all in one direction when we walk out of a meeting room, and our players are savvy and. They get it. So we, as far as, I don't think I've ever been in a meeting where there's been any type of disagreement or, or a player holding back. Cause I feel that we value ourselves as a approachable coaching staff, and you guys don't see us kind of behind closed doors, and we have great relationships with our players. And, so there's nothing that they won't come to us and talk to us about.
Right, so everybody's involved, and that's not so much pushback, but it's a collaboration.
A collective, yeah.
Well, Miles, we appreciate your time. Before we let you go, there's something I kind of always wanted to know, but I've never remembered to ask this question of any coach I've talked to. How do you guys handle set pieces? Do you just tell the players to – create, or, you know, because like there's some games where you might have, you know, 20 free kicks and you can't just do the same free kick over and over. Do you tell them to be creative? Do you work on specific things that you want to try, or is it a mixture of those two approaches?
No, we rehearse, you know, a bunch of ones that we all are, that the team knows, and then they have to, you know, obviously see what is going on as the pieces move, and decide on which one they're going to run, or if they see something that's open, they play it. So like I said earlier, we have a lot of savvy guys on the ball with Sasha and Yotun, you know, that know and can kind of see different things happening, you know, as plays develop. So, you know, we do have, a lot of set plays that we have in our, you know, in our bag of tricks, mm-hmm. so to speak. Probably haven't seen all of them yet because maybe it hasn't showed up yet, but there's a little bit of an arsenal there, and, you know, we can, you know, we can trust the guys to know when the right time is to do it.
All right. Well, Miles Joseph, Orlando City assistant coach, thank you so much for being with us on the Mainland Podcast. Best of luck to you the rest of the season, and we really hope you get Yuri Rosell and everybody else healthy and back in the rotation quickly.
Me too. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. It was fun. Hopefully I'll be on again with you guys.
All right, Dave. Well, that was pretty great. It was a lot of fun talking to Miles Joseph, and we will be sure to have him on again. I mean, he's already thrown that invitation out there if we want him on again. So,
absolutely.
Unless he was just blowing smoke, he's wanting to come back and talk some more. So we'll be happy to have him back on. It was educational for me. I've always wondered. It's like, you know, I assume there's some things you identify during game film that you want to see if you can pick on set pieces. But I always also wonder, you know, when you have 15, 20 free kicks, at some point you go, what else can we do? You know, and you see this,
right.
Like really, like the Red Bulls have these very elaborate sort of playground set pieces that they work on. And those are really cool to watch. And you always wonder, you know, what else are these guys working on and how do they pick them out of their hat at any given time? So it was good to get that answered and good to talk to Miles. So,
and frankly, I like the insight into the mind of Jason Kreis.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing that impressed me about Jason, this past week is that he said that, you know, they asked him, we didn't talk about this really, but, you know, there were some kids up from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. Uh-huh. And also, you know, there was the situation with Miguel Vasquez, the supporters group capo from ILF that passed away. And, you know, he talked about the crowd and how they want to feel this connectedness with the fans. So they want it to be like a family. And he said it was very important to him when he even took the job that it was a place where the fans did feel like family. And it struck me as a really interesting thing to say, considering how much heat that he's been taking, you know. And, you know, the pessimist will say, well, he's just trying to get on our good side kind of thing, you know. But
I don't buy it.
There's an earnestness about Jason Kreis that, you know, comes through when you speak to him, you know, a foot away. You know, that you don't necessarily maybe capture in a radio interview or a TV interview or whatever when you're just getting sound bites. But,
or
know,
a picture on the web or a meme or something like that. I mean,
yeah, and I honestly think that that he's not just paying lip service. I mean, he wants to be here a long time. He wants his assistants to be with him a long time until, you know, maybe they get their own teams, and he wants his family to be here a long time, and he wants the community to be part of that family. And I really believe that. And it really struck me. It was good to see him have a really good game in terms of calling.
Absolutely.
And you know, that kind of brings us into our Ask the Mainland podcast for this week, Dave. And of course, as you know, you're well aware of this, but maybe some of our listeners don't know how they can ask us literally any question they have. Literally
any question.
Any question they have, they can ask us.
We'll have it answered.
Yes, and they can do that two ways. There's the old-fashioned way where you email us, and you can email themainland@gmail.com. And you can also hit us up on Twitter and just at us. We are at the mainland, and just include our Twitter handle in the reply, and also include the hashtag AskTMLPC, which stands for Ask the Mainland Podcast.
And I suppose technically they could send a carrier pigeon, but I'm not giving out my address.
Yeah, the send a raven, Dave.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so anyway, we do have some questions, and I appreciate those who sent some in. We have a question from actually, the first one I wanted to get to was one that I'm not even sure if we ever got to before. It's from back on the 19th. And I think we might have missed it. I don't remember talking about this, but of course I'm old and you're old, so we kind of could have.
And if we did, we apologize profusely. Yeah, so, and if we already did it, we apologize profusely. Yes,
either way, you're getting an apology out of us. Alex Motes had sent in a question that he keeps hearing that Jason Kreis has a good problem in choosing a center back pairing based on Sané's second half against New York City FC and Spector not doing anything to lose his spot. Why is there an argument? And you can see Sané's IQ in just that second half. It's what we're lacking in our second center back. Good soccer IQ. And I think that the good problem is not that anyone would necessarily go to the bench. The good problem is that you've got two capable and intelligent center backs, regardless of which two you pick between Sané and Spector and Tarek. And Tarek has been a very pleasant surprise this year. He's been nothing spectacular, but he's been very steady and very consistent. And he's played pretty well overall. In fact, he was our player of the month from the website because in our staff vote, because he just had that steady, you know, nothing spectacular, no real great highs, but no lows either. So he really had a really good, solid first month of his MLS or of his Orlando City career. He's actually played a little bit in MLS before, but that's what it is. And I honestly don't know. I think Sané and Spector is probably the preferred center back pairing that the coaching staff envisioned when they brought in the offseason acquisitions. But the way Tarek's played, I don't think you can go wrong. And I think that's kind of what's meant. I certainly Spector hasn't done anything wrong to lose his spot. And Sané has done some good things. And he got beat a few times. And every center back gets beat, so that's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. Just look at Kansas City. They were shipping goals with one of the best back lines in the game. Or in the league. But yeah, I mean, you could see he's got an athleticism. He's got an intelligence. He made a number of, there was the week or the game in GIFs that or GIFs, if you prefer to pronounce it that way, on the club's website. And one of those shows a really heads up play by Sané. He read the play, knew that the pass was coming, stepped up at the perfect time and forced an offside play. Which he also tried to do on the second goal, but didn't quite react quickly enough, mostly because of the turnover by Lindley. But you can see the skill that he has. He nearly scored a goal. Kleshin put a free kick like about 2 inches over his head on earlier in the game. So there's a lot of quality there, and he's expected to be a starter alongside your captain. You don't name a guy captain and then have him on the bench. So that's kind of the preferred pairing. And Tarek has been steady. He's been pretty good. So you can't really go wrong with them. And it's not a matter of I think Jason will play the guys that are playing the best or the pairing that shows the most chemistry. I think that's where he'll go with this.
I think this is a problem that we're not used to in that we have more than – well, maybe not more than enough, but we have plenty of center backs that are quality players. We're not used to that. And so, you know, whether it's El Capitan Spector, who we already know his quality, and then what we've seen from Sané, which we expected, and then, like you said, this maybe the surprise of Tarek. I think one of the reasons why he got the vote internally was that, you know, expectations were not – not that they were low, but we didn't know what to expect. And so he goes out and he plays very solidly. And then it's like, oh, hey, look at that. There's another good center back. And that's somebody that we can count to be on the field and, you know, not screw up too many times. Excellent. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's it's not something we've been used to over the last couple of years. And so, you know, being able to, and I know we've said this before, but being able to rotate three center backs, you know, no matter who starts, is a luxury that we haven't had before. And so, I don't even remember the original question, but you know, my answer boils down to, okay, yeah, all three, I'll take them. It's good.
Yeah. So thanks for the question, Alex. And I don't think we answered it before, but if we did, I apologize to everybody for the rambling we just did. We have another Twitter question coming to us from Elder Gorilla. Elder Gorilla wants to know, did Jason Christ deserve MLS Coach of the Week, and shouldn't Dom be in the starting 11 for MLS Team of the Week? And my answer to both of those questions, Dave, is yes, because I think that Dom really carried Orlando City in a lot of ways emotionally. Certainly scoring the two goals, providing energy. I think his battle with Aurelien Collins seemed to sort of rub off on his teammates in terms of, you know, inspiring them to play hard and to play through contact and to, you know, be physical. And I think all of those things were good. And I certainly am not going to take away from what I think the three strikers in the MLS Team of the Week were Zlatan and Altidore and Baji. Baji had a hat trick. Certainly, I mean, I voted for him.
Sure.
I voted for him for MLS Player of the Week, so I would certainly have him in there. Zlatan did two goals in 19 minutes and essentially carried LA back from a 3-0 deficit to a win. I will admit I didn't see the Toronto game, so I don't know about Altidore, but I certainly think Dom was as deserving to be in that line, attacking line on MLS Team of the Week as Zlatan was. So, because I think he performed the exact same role for Orlando that Zlatan played for LA. So, yeah, he was deserving. And as far as Kreis, I mean, he doesn't always make the popular choice, but I think that it's a credit to him to come out with a different shape in the second half to get a little more of the game. I think it worked. I think for in a lot of ways it really kind of kept the Red Bulls from being dangerous for most of the second half. And you know, I certainly think that he earned that win as much as anybody. So yes to both questions. Dave, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Only that, you know, like I said earlier, if Zlatan hadn't, you know, chipped the goalie the way he did, Dwyer would have gotten goal of the week. So, you know, obviously he was deserving. And then as far as Jason goes, making those halftime adjustments, much to either the joy or the chagrin of a lot of our readers, I'm not sure. You know, that showed awareness of what was going on in the match, what needed to be done. And, you know, especially against a Red Bulls team that's been scoring in bunches, and to go out and outscore them was pretty much the only way that this was going to go down. So to be able to put the players in the right places to be able to do that, I absolutely think he was deserving.
Yeah, I'm going to contrast his game with Jesse Marsh's game, because Jesse Marsh had a player who was injured and playing. He was off the field for a good couple minutes. I'm talking about Duncan. And he was off the field. He was stretching. He was kind of laying down. And it looked like it was just a matter of waiting until somebody kicked the ball out of bounds, and he was gonna get subbed out. He did not get subbed out. They ended up bringing Bradley Wright Phillips on the field and left Duncan out there, and then Marsh was out of subs, and he had a guy who, it turns out, had a torn ACL. Yep. So he was not able to take him out of the game. He did actually leave the game. He limped around and tried to do what he could and get in the way a little bit, but he eventually just walked off the field late in the game. And it was I'm sure it's a substitution Marsh would like to have back probably, but you know, in the moment he needed offense, and he's got a Bradley Wright Phillips there, so I don't know if he could have maybe had somebody rotate back and play in Duncan's place and have taken him off instead of I can't remember who Bradley Wright Phillips came on for, but he probably could have changed his mind on who to take off there and maybe figured something out, even if it was to go three in the back or whatever. So sure. But anyway, yes. So yes to both questions. Thank you, Elder Gorilla, for your questions. Question from email. Lee Gavlik wants to know, what's your go-to concession stand or favorite food at Orlando City Stadium? Dave, you've only been there, what, once?
No, I've been there. I went there I've been there six games.
Six games, really?
Yeah, yeah.
You came down six times last year and I only saw you once?
No. Over the last 2 years, I've been down six times.
Yeah, but Orlando City Stadium, Dave.
Oh, Orlando City Stadium. Okay,
yeah,
yes.
Not Orlando City Twice. Games. Okay.
Twice. Yeah.
All right. Twice. So what's your go-to concession stand, favorite food at Orlando City Stadium?
Are we considering beer food?
I think most would consider it a beverage.
Oh, dang it. All right. Well, I'm a popcorn guy, so I'm going to keep it simple. I go for popcorn. Why? If you spill it, doesn't matter, and it's light enough and there's enough of it that you can eat it for a little while and not feel bad about paying the money for it. So that's what I go for.
I'll admit that I don't sit in the stands very often. I'm usually in the press box. I've only sat in the stands a couple of times myself. But
well, and to be fair, I mean, the times I've been in Orlando City Stadium, I've been in the standing section, so yeah. I got to take something that I can hold easily.
Yeah, and I was in the supporter section as well for a couple of times that I've been in there too. So I'm a pretzel guy, a soft pretzel guy, big soft pretzel guy.
All right, hard to argue with that one. Yeah, that's good. Choice.
I like to get the soft pretzel, get some mustard on it, and
I was going to say, do you do mustard? Okay,
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's my go-to. I'm sure there are some really good selections in there, but I haven't really done a lot of walking around. Most of the games I go to, I've tailgated, so I'm really full when I get in the game usually.
Right.
I think, in fact, the only time I actually ate at the stadium when I was in the stands was for the U.S. men's national team game for the World Cup qualifier. That's when I had the pretzels.
Okay.
And so
it's available, you just haven't done it during an Orlando City game.
Right. And I I'm there at the press box most of the time, and in the press box they got some good stuff. I like the build your own taco night in the press box.
What?
Yeah.
See, now you're going to make all the listeners jealous that they don't get build your own taco.
Well, I mean, for all I know, there's an artisanal taco stand in there somewhere. I haven't like cruised the concourses there and seen what all there is. I haven't.
So
I would love to have more time to spend doing that, but
everybody on Twitter at Mainland Michael, there's no artisanal taco stand.
Are you sure?
If there is, then at @DeveRowe and tell me I'm wrong.
And just tell us where it is if there is one.
So yeah, yes, and tell us where it is for the next time we go. I mean, geez.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Lee, for the question. I think our final question tonight comes to us from Mark Johnson. Dave, he wants to ask your prediction for the Merseyside Derby. And you have a dog in the fight. I don't have a dog in the fight.
Okay, so Mark Johnson has a dog in the fight, just so everybody – a friend of the show, Mark Johnson.
Is he an Everton fan?
He isn't. Now, I'm going to give a little backstory here. Mark Johnson is a more recent soccer fan, was actually an Orlando City fan before he was an EPL fan, which is rare. And I tried to bring him to the good side and let him be a Liverpool fan with me so we could watch the games together just like we do Orlando City. However, he has some uncle or another that's an Everton fan, so he decided to go to the dark side. I'm sure he's since regretted it. We have lots of fun meetings now on the Merseyside Derbies. To answer the question, it's going to be 3-1 Liverpool because you cannot stop Mo Salah. Mo will get a brace. Somebody else, whether it's Firmino, who knows, doesn't matter. Somebody else will get one, and because it's a derby, Everton will get one, but nah, it's going to be a disappointment for Mr. Mark Johnson.
I'm still disappointed that Mo left Roma. Just saying. Just saying.
I'm not.
I think Liverpool will win. I don't have a score prediction for you, Mark. I think Liverpool will win. I don't like either team, so I really kind of root for the meteor to hit the stadium in these kind of matchups. Although I have a soft spot for Wayne Rooney, being a Manchester United fan that I am. So, but I don't trust Everton to win against the top teams usually. So, I think Liverpool wins this.
All right, well, there you go.
Everton gets clopped.
They do indeed get clopped.
All right. Thanks to everybody for sending their questions. Again, ask the Mainland Podcast any question you have, themainland@gmail.com. You can email them or send us a Twitter. We are at the Mainland, and you can use the hashtag AskTMLPC. Dave, we've got one more bit of business before we get on out of here.
All right.
That is our key matchups and predictions for Orlando City against the Portland Timbers.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I actually did, like, chop down a tree in the last week. I was actually chainsaw certified with the U.S. Forest Service, so I did do that in the last week. And so I think that... like me against the tree in my girlfriend's yard, Orlando City does take down the Timbers. So key matchup. I see it's our midfield against theirs, and in particular setting up our attack. I think now that we've got some of the pieces back, I think Coleman will see the field a little bit earlier. Sasha and Miriam, I think that's going to be the big key for us that will allow us to take advantage of a struggling Timbers team, especially one that's on the road. And as such, I'm going to predict a 2-1 win for Orlando at home.
All right. So you're going 2-1. I think this is a team that Portland is starting to play better. Fernando Adi is a good player. He's going to be difficult to deal with. I think the main problem for Orlando City is slowing down guys like, obviously Blanco and Adi. Those are two guys that you definitely have to deal with when you are playing Portland. And but I also think Chara is a guy that I think I'm probably going to go with Orlando City's attack against, you know, Chara, because Chara is one of those guys that breaks up play all over the pitch, and he's sort of the engine for them, and sort of an emotional, or inspirational kind of leader, you know, when he makes those crunching tackles and that kind of thing. So I think, dealing with him is going to be an issue, especially when you got guys that are a little bit older, like Kleshchen, in that sort of that area of the field. So it's going to be a case of how they deal with Chara, and of course on the other end, how they deal with Diego Valeri. Because sure. he is as slippery as they come, and he tore Orlando City apart last year. So I guess the two Diegos, dealing with the Diegos, is my key matchup. Diego Chara, Diego Valeri, got to deal with them. And I really like what Sebastian Blanco brings to the team as well. So he had a tremendous assist last week against Chicago. The Timbers started the season with a pretty difficult schedule. I don't think they've played at home yet, in fact. I think they're doing some renovation on the stadium, maybe expanding a little bit, and I think it's they've started on the road, and so they've, you know, it was always going to be sort of a difficult start to the season for them, but they're starting to put things together. They went to Chicago and got a result, so they are certainly starting to turn things around a little bit. In fact, they have draws in their last two games. So at Chicago last week, at FC Dallas the week before that, and then of course there was the lopsided loss to Red Bulls, and then they opened with a close loss to LA Galaxy. But everything has been away.
Pretty Zlatan.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go 2-2. I think this is a game where I don't like some of the matchups that I see, and I see Portland sort of turning the corner under Savarese a little bit the last couple weeks. So
My big reason for going 2-1 is, yes, they traveled, but they traveled to FC Dallas, which is not that far, and Chicago, which, okay, it's far, but they're traveling all like from one end of the country to the other this time. Mm-hmm. And so, and you and I have mentioned many times that that's a challenge on the road, and that is why I'm giving the edge, because normally I probably would have also chosen a draw, but I'm giving the edge to an Orlando City team that has finally scored some goals, mm-hmm. is feeling good, is at home, and is playing a team that's traveling across the country. That's
your reasoning is all very sound. I'm probably just skeptical because I want to see Orlando do it again before I start to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit. you know, as somebody pointed out, the Red Bulls did play, you know, a lot of second choice players, as well as, you know, I mean, we didn't see Tyler Adams. We didn't see Moyle. We didn't see, we see Royer. I don't know if we did. We didn't see Sean Davis. We didn't see. We saw a little bit of Bradley Wright Phillips.
Didn't see
Parker. So they didn't. There were some second choice players in there,
right.
and so I want to see him do it again. Let's do it. Show me again. If you could do it against Portland and go out and get a win, and score 3 or 4 goals, then you know I'll start to get on that bandwagon. But you know. I'm going to be cautious. I'm optimistic, but I'm cautious. So
okay. So what you know right now is that it will not be a 2-2 tie, and it will not be a 2-1 win. It will be something else.
Something else. Usually it is. All right. Well, I think that we've done just about all the damage we can do for this week, Dave. We'll put a bow here on episode 119 of the Mainland Podcast. Big thank you to Miles Joseph for being with us this week, the assistant coach for Orlando City, and or one of the assistant coaches. They have more than one. And we want to thank Rafa Cabrera for setting that up. Thank you to the staff.
As always.
Yeah, thank you to the staff at Orlando City SC. Also, they provided a photo for our post for this as well. So, because we didn't have any pictures of Miles Joseph. it's really hard to get good pictures of the coaches because they stick our photographers at the, you know, over the end lines. So, you know, unless you got a really good zoom, you're not getting great shots of the coaches. So we don't, you know, I look at what our photographers turn in and I'm like, yeah, there's nothing. There's no coaches. They're far away. But anyway, so thank you to Jackie for rounding that up. And thank you to the club for loaning us a photo. And thank you to Rafa for setting up the interview. But most of all, thank you to Michael Miles Joseph for his time on a busy you know, game week. Dave, that will do it. We'll be back next week, you and I, to break down Orlando City against the Portland Timbers. We'll probably talk about the U.S. women in their 2 games against Mexico. They mm-hmm. should win both of those comfortably, but you never know. You know, anything can happen in the international game. And, you know, we'll have a quick turnaround because the Portland game's on Sunday and then the Philadelphia trip is the Friday. So we'll have plenty to discuss, and then we'll have to get ready also for the Pride at the Portland Thorns. So lots and lots going on. We're in the thick of this thing now, Dave, and tell everybody where they can find you on the social.
Obviously I'm at the Mainland and you can find my articles there. I'm also at DEVEROHE on Twitter, and feel free to at me there, whatever you like. I think that's probably about everywhere they can get me.
Yep, and you can at me on Twitter at Mainland Michael, and spell Maine M-A-N-E like Alliance Maine. Please like us on Facebook or Facebook page, and you know, follow us on Twitter. Read our stuff at themainland.com, and tell everybody about this podcast. And have them subscribe. That'd be great. And of course, if you send us or if you write a review and give us a 5-star review, we will read that on the air.
And write something.
Yeah, you got to write it. You got to write something. You can't just, if you just put a 5 stars in there, we don't know.
We don't know
who you are.
We thank you.
Yeah, we thank you. And it certainly helps us reach more people. So that's always important. So we'll get out of here and we'll put this one to bed, the Mainland Podcast episode number 119. We are signing off the way we usually do, by saying, Go City!